I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's August 9th, and we have a lot to talk about. One of the realities of living with MS is that you're often dealing with symptoms that are invisible. And because your symptoms aren't apparent to others, it can be hard for the people around you to understand what MS is all about, and specifically what you might be struggling with. Too often, that can lead to confusion among your coworkers, or uncomfortable and unnecessary social or relationship disconnects. My guest, Kathy Costello, is joining me today to talk about how to best manage the invisible symptoms of MS and how to constructively shut down those conversations that always seem to begin with, "But you look so healthy." As an adult nurse practitioner, Kathy specialized in MS care in academic comprehensive care centers for more than 25 years. Today, Kathy is a vice president of programs at CanDo MS, an organization that delivers health and wellness education programs to help families living with MS thrive. But before we get to my conversation with Kathy Costello, there are a few other things that you should know about. An analysis of the outcomes from 50 different studies involving over 4,000 people with MS concluded that autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, or AHSCT, reduces disability and relapse rates in people with MS. In this study, a research team in Iran pooled the data from 50 previously published studies. This type of study is called a meta-analysis. And the researchers looked at the outcomes in each of these 50 studies 5 years after the study participants had received their stem cell transplant. The results of this meta-analysis showed that 5 years after AHSCT, 73% of the study participants were alive and had experienced no disability progression. 68% of the study participants had no evidence of disease activity. And on average, scores on the Expanded Disability Status Scale, or EDSS, had decreased slightly, indicating the study participants experienced slightly less severe disability. The study also showed that 4% of the study participants had died from transplant-related complications. That being said, I also want to point out that technical advances and improvements in patient selection have made this procedure safer in more recent years. We've talked about AHSCT before, but I think it's worth noting that the National MS Society has reviewed evidence on the use of AHSCT to treat multiple sclerosis and has found it to be a good treatment option for some people, specifically for people who have very aggressive relapsing remitting MS and who have not benefited from disease-modifying therapies. Now, a moment ago, I mentioned that improvements in patient selection have helped to make AHSCT a safer procedure. Research shows that the ideal candidate for this treatment is someone under the age of 50 who has lived with relapsing remitting MS for less than 10 years and has experienced new inflammatory lesions on their MRI, or they've experienced relapses despite treatment with a high-efficacy disease-modifying therapy. And that group of high-efficacy DMTs includes Tysabri, Lemtrada, Ocrevus, Rituxan, and Kesimpta. Some MS specialists also consider Mavenclad to be a high-efficacy DMT. Now, if you'd like to learn more about autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, you'll find a link in today's show notes. And if you'd like to review the details of this meta-analysis of 50 studies focused on the effects of AHSCT on people living with MS, well, you'll also find that link in today's show notes. Last week, the National MS Society announced it was investing $19 million to launch 40 new multi-year studies to drive progress toward achieving the three goals of the Pathways to Cures initiative. stopping MS progression, restoring lost function, and ending MS forever. These new research initiatives include a study at Oregon Health and Sciences University, where researchers will investigate how to block signals that cause nerve cells to die in MS. There is a study at Case Western Reserve University, where researchers will seek new targets for treatments to repair damage to the nervous system in people with MS. A study at Johns Hopkins University will test a potential treatment for MS-related fatigue. And a study at the University of California, San Francisco is going to look at analyzing immune cells in the spinal fluid of people living with MS for clues about what triggers multiple sclerosis. This $19 million investment is part of a projected total investment of nearly $30 million in 2022 to support more than 250 new and ongoing research studies around the world, including support and leadership for the International Progressive MS Alliance, a global effort to accelerate treatments for people living with progressive MS, and an initiative that many of you know is very close to my heart. If you'd like to review the details of all of these newly funded research awards, you'll find a link in today's show notes. And if you have the free Real Talk MS app installed on your smartphone or tablet, you'll find that review waiting for you under the bonus content tab. For those of you who choose to review the details of these new research awards, I hope you'll take a moment to notice that the descriptions of each study include a single sentence, easy to understand summary written in plain English that explains that study's potential impact for people with MS. And that in itself is something very good for everyone who's not a scientist. After 2 years of virtual fundraising, the 14th annual Burgers to Beat MS Day is back. It's live, it's face-to-face, and it's taking place at A&W locations across Canada. So for those of you living in Canada, or those of you with plans to be in Canada on Thursday, August 18th, A&W is going to donate $2 for every teen burger sold to support the work of the MS Society of Canada. Over the past 13 years, A&W has raised over $17 million to support research, programs, and services for Canadians living with MS. Olympic gold medalist and Canadian national women's soccer team captain Christine Sinclair is once again championing this effort to honor her mother who lived with MS. And if you'd like to participate, but you don't want to wait until August 18th, or you don't happen to live in Canada, you can visit burgerstobeatms.ca and make your online donation today. You'll find that link in today's show notes. MedRhythms is a company that's developed an interesting platform that leverages music and technology to treat people with neurologic injury or disease. For people living with MS, MedRhythms is developing a digital therapeutic that targets and treats gait deficits. And if you happen to live in or around Boston, Massachusetts, or Portland, Maine, MedRhythms is looking for people with MS to participate in their work by walking with this new product and then providing some feedback about their experience. If you'd like to learn more or you're interested in volunteering to participate, you can email appliedresearch@medrhythms.com and you'll find that link in today's show notes. If you're dealing with gait issues, you're dealing with a symptom of MS that's apparent. It's something that people can see. But if you're dealing with numbness and tingling, depression, vision issues, fatigue, or pain, well, then you're living with one or more of the invisible symptoms of MS. Those are the symptoms that people around you don't see and don't understand. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Kathy Costello, and we'll get into how to best manage the invisible symptoms of MS and how to best talk about these invisible symptoms with friends, family, and colleagues so you can put those "but you look so healthy" comments to rest and maybe avoid them altogether. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Kathy Costello. If you're living with MS, you know all too well that many MS symptoms are invisible symptoms, which means no matter the challenges that they may present to someone living with MS, the people around you can't see what you're dealing with. And those moments can lead to uncomfortable and unnecessary social or relationship disconnects. Joining us today to discuss some common invisible symptoms of MS and how to manage them, as well as how to best handle those conversations that always begin with, "But you look so good," is Kathy Costello. As an adult nurse practitioner, Kathy specialized in MS care and academic comprehensive care centers for more than 25 years. Today, Kathy's Vice President of Programs at CanDo MS, an organization that delivers health and wellness education programs to help families living with MS thrive. Welcome back to the podcast, Kathy.
Thanks so much, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
As I mentioned a moment ago, invisible symptoms that aren't apparent to others are common in MS. What are some of the most common invisible symptoms?
Yeah, there's actually a bunch. Probably more symptoms than we actually think about are invisible to others, such as fatigue, mood disorders like depression or anxiety, cognitive issues, difficulties with thinking, processing, remembering, pain, bowel and bladder symptoms, sexual problems, and changes in vision.
Well, before we get into some of those specifics, and we will, I'm wondering why it is that some people experience visible MS symptoms, like mobility or speech difficulties, while others experience these invisible symptoms?
It's a great question. And it's all about where the problem is occurring in the central nervous system. So MS causes inflammation. It causes damage to the cells that make myelin. It causes damage to the underlying nerve fiber. And ultimately, that's reflected by symptoms that we see that are associated with MS. So unfortunately, a lot of those pathways produce invisible symptoms, like the overall inflammatory process produces fatigue. Problems with the visual pathways or the muscles that control our eye movements can provoke visual symptoms. Problems in the spinal cord or even tracts up into the brain can affect sensation or pain, for example. Also in the spinal cord, we may start to see problems with bowel and bladder. You can also see mobility issues, but those are different pathways.
How does someone know if an invisible symptom is from MS or if it's from something else?
Yeah, it's really hard to figure out on your own. Well, gosh, is this my MS or is this because I've gotten older? Is this because I've had a bunch of kids and now I have bladder urgency? It's really hard to sort that out on your own. And this is where you tap into your experts, right? So you bring this up with your MS provider when you have a new symptom or a newly worsening symptom. Now it's important to talk about it. And think ahead of time. What is the symptom? When did it start? What's it doing? Well, how much difficulty is it causing you? What have you done about it? And have you ever had it before? Because this is going to help your provider start to figure out what the problem is. What's the source of the symptom? And knowing that can help to drive what the treatment's going to be and what management plan the two of you can come up with.
What's the best way for someone to explain these invisible MS symptoms to their family and their friends?
So it's really important to be kind about it because the frustration is people don't get it. So it can provoke a lot of anger and frustration, but that anger and frustration is not going to help change someone's mind and help them suddenly get more understanding. But creating vivid descriptions that people can relate to can often help them in their understanding, because now they can actually see what you're talking about. And that can really help in their level of understanding of what you might be going through. So you can relate it to something they've done. For instance, if it's your cognitive issues and you're having trouble with your memory, for example, you may say, "Hey, remember yesterday when you spent 2 hours looking for your car keys and how angry and upset you got?" I get it, because that happens to me like, I don't know, 6 or 10 times a day. And so when I'm talking to you about those cognitive issues, maybe you can think about those frustrating 2 hours that you spent, and maybe you'll have a little bit more understanding about what I'm experiencing.
Let's get into some of these specific symptoms, and we'll start with what may be the most common invisible symptom of MS. About 80% of the people living with MS experience fatigue, and fatigue can stop you from fully engaging in every area of your life. But when you tell someone you're experiencing fatigue, they often assume that you're telling them you're tired. How is MS fatigue different from being tired?
So it is about being tired, but it's a different kind of tired. So we all have activities that make us exhausted, right? The difference is in MS is that people experience what they describe as a lassitude, where they can't go on either cognitively, emotionally, or physically, or all three. They must stop. It just won't work any longer. And it can happen at the same time every day. It's not relieved by rest or sleep. It's worsened by the heat. And generally causes a remarkable amount of frustration and a withdrawal from the activities that people really want to participate in. And it's hard for others to get it. They'll say things like, well, you know, if you just exercise more, you'd have more energy, you know, or if you just, you know, if you went to bed at night at a reasonable hour, you'll wake up and you'll be refreshed. And that's just not how it happens in MS. It's of course, way more complicated than that.
What's the best way for someone to explain their fatigue so that their friends or family members get it?
Yeah, it's a tough one. But, you know, there is a story that I like, and it's called the Spoon Story. And it was developed by a woman who had lupus, actually, but also experienced fatigue. And in this story, it goes like this. If you, John, do not have MS, you start your day with 5 spoons of energy. I have MS, and I start my day with 3 because MS robbed me already of 3 spoons, and I'm not going to have them. So I'm going to have to manage with less. So we all have things that we have to do all day long that are going to require energy. So for example, we might need 1 spoon to get to work, another spoon to work, another spoon to get home and make dinner, and maybe a 4th spoon to help our kids with their homework. Oh, but you started your day with 5 spoons. I only started with 3. So I don't have enough spoons for all that activity. I've run out before I've even gotten home. And so it helps people to see that you're at a deficit to start with, and then you're going to use it up. And sometimes an activity might take you an extra spoon to actually get the same outcome from the activity. So it's very visual, and you can actually use the spoons. Like, here's 5, and now let's go through our day and use our spoons and see how it turns out at the end of the day. So that's one that I particularly like because it's vivid and visual.
It's a great idea. Depression is another invisible symptom that affects 1 out of every 2 people living with MS. What are the signs of depression that people who are living with MS should be aware of?
So there's a bunch, as it turns out, because depression can affect every aspect of our life, right? And so we may start having trouble concentrating or remembering the details of something or even making a decision. All of a sudden, that's become more difficult, more fatigue, feeling even more exhausted. And then some that are a little bit more worrisome, like feeling guilty or worthless or hopeless or even helpless to make any change that's going to make anything better. Feeling pessimistic, sad. These are things that really can be associated with a change in mood that we know as depression. Having trouble with sleep, either falling asleep or waking up really before dawn on a regular basis is an indication that there might be a problem with mood. Loss of interest in doing the things that used to bring you joy, and they don't bring you joy anymore. Crying, feeling sadness on more days than not feeling sad. Change in your appetite, eating more, eating less. Then physical symptoms, aches, pains, digestive issues. What? They don't sound like depression, but depression can really just invade every aspect of us. So these are things that people really need to think about. And then if it gets to the point where you actually start having those little sensations or feelings or thoughts of, you know, maybe I just shouldn't be here anymore, that's a danger sign. And when depression is untreated for a period of time, that's when those kinds of feelings can start to creep in there. So these are all important. And, you know, sometimes you're not going to have any idea. Is this depression or is this just something else? That's okay. What you need to do is tell someone about it. Tell your loved one what's happening. Tell your MS provider what's going on. to your primary care and let them help you sort through this to best understand what's happening.
Pain is a common invisible symptom of MS that can limit someone's ability to do the kinds of things they enjoy. What type of pain do people living with MS experience? And what can they do about it?
People with MS, there's two main types of pain that occur in MS. One is neuropathic and one is musculoskeletal. And just as the words describe, neuropathic coming from the nerves, so coming from direct damage from MS. Musculoskeletal can be from developing a new way of walking so that you don't trip or fall. And that can give you a terrible backache or a pain in your hip. And that can also give musculoskeletal pain can also be tightness or spasticity of the muscles that can put tension on the joints and cause pain. And you may also experience actual spasms or cramps. And these can happen any time of day, but often can be worse at night, making sleep more difficult. On the neuropathic side, this is when people will get a searing or burning or a relentless gnawing kind of pain that is really just awful. An example would be someone who gets facial pain from trigeminal neuralgia. Even the air blowing across your face in someone with trigeminal neuralgia can be enough to send searing pain through your face. It can just be awful. It can be experienced in a limb, in the torso, really anywhere. You can experience these types of burning, searing types of pain. And again, like other pain, it's often worse at night. Just when you want to settle down and hope that you can get away from it, now it's even worse. So what do you do about it? And the thing is, it's not one thing. For musculoskeletal pain, it's often physical therapy. Or if someone is seated all day long, it might be the chair that they're seated in, the pad that they're sitting on. Sometimes if they're inadequate, that can produce pain. Spasticity, spasms, that gait that we develop to avoid tripping, that can be helped through physical therapy. On the other side of things, on the neuropathic side, it's a little bit more complicated because the medicines that are used to treat our usual kinds of pain, like headache pain, don't really work for neuropathic pain. But there are medicines that can be used that do help. Sometimes medicines that are used to treat depression are actually good for relieving pain, not because they're tied together. The mechanism that the medicine works helps pain. Sometimes medicines that work for people who have seizures to reduce the number of seizures can also reduce the amount of pain that someone is experiencing. And then there are other kinds of interventions that can help us with our perception of pain, things like cognitive behavioral therapy, which you can participate in with a psychologist, for example. And they can help you identify the triggers that seem to make the pain worse, and it might reduce that pain for you.
It's been estimated that between 40 and 65% of the people with MS experience some degree of cognitive change over the course of the disease. What are some signs of MS-related cognitive changes?
Yeah, so cognitive function encompasses a lot of different things, a lot of what we call different domains. And so the common ones for MS are processing speed. So it all seems to slow down. Like all of a sudden, the computer of your brain is 20 years old, and it's just not able to process information as fast as you want it to. And that can come out in a conversation, for example, when you're processing the question. And by the time you come up with your response, the conversation's 10 steps ahead of you. It's very frustrating. So it also, cognitive dysfunction in MS can affect short-term memory, right? So what did you just do? Who was that person's? What's that person's name? What was that message that I was supposed to give to you? What did we just watch on TV? What did I just read? Learning new information can be very challenging for people. So these are just a few of the challenges that people can have. There are others, but those tend to be at the top of the list.
And how should people experiencing some of these cognitive changes best manage them?
So there's a couple of things that happen here. One is that people don't tell anybody anything. And they keep it hidden because they don't want people to know that they're struggling. So they work extra hard. What used to take them an hour takes them 4 hours to do. So they wind up working more to get the same outcomes. But often people start to notice. And so it's a two-way street. Sometimes family members start to notice and they are concerned on whether or not they should say something to the person. So I think how it should happen is this, is that if someone notices that they're having problems in these areas of short-term memory or processing speed, those kinds of things, maybe even multitasking or keeping attention, a few other areas that may be involved, let their provider know, like, hey, I'm having these problems. And if they're not that clear, like most of us don't think, huh, am I having difficulty with processing speed? People don't think like that, but they do think, man, I am having a heck of a time at work and I am not able to get through. And my boss is really on me because I'm not productive. I'm not meeting my endpoints. That could be a signal that someone is having some cognitive issues. So important to bring it up and listen to the family member who says, you know, I'm kind of noticing that you're having some trouble with one of these things. Listen and bring that to the attention of your healthcare provider. It's hard to hear, but there are strategies both to assess and there's strategies that can help so that you can be more productive at work. You can participate more in your home activities. But if you don't say anything, nothing changes.
Although the invisible symptoms we've been talking about are all different, are there any consistent strategies to best treat and manage these invisible symptoms collectively?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because I think there is some commonality here. And I think mostly what I find is that it's not one thing that solves the problem. Usually you have to come at it from different angles. For example, maybe there's medication involved, or maybe there's a rehabilitation strategy involved, or maybe it's a lifestyle change. For example, let's talk about bladder urgency. Okay, so maybe there's medication that can help, but maybe if you avoid caffeine and other bladder irritants, that can help. And there's even pelvic floor physical therapy to strengthen the muscles that, given whatever the problem is, might also be helpful. So multiple strategies to attack the problem and being persistent, because sometimes those first few interventions don't get at the solution. But if you're persistent and continue to try, most of these symptoms can really have a pretty good solution.
A moment ago, I heard you say something along the lines of, if you don't talk about it, nothing changes. What's at risk if someone doesn't take action to manage their MS symptoms?
That's such a good question, John. And it really can create quite a damaging spiral. Because what happens is people start to withdraw. Right. So if they're experiencing these symptoms, they're not telling anybody about them. They start to withdraw from their activities. They start to have difficulties at work. They start to do less. And that compounds other issues in MS. For example, if you're having trouble with mobility at any level and you do less, you're going to be able to do less. It's unfortunately a domino and a spiral effect there. So when you don't talk about it, your mood can suffer. Your self-esteem, your confidence, your feelings that you're able to manage this disease. And it can really be crushing. So talking about it and getting to solution, trying things and having that hopeful approach is so much more beneficial. It speaks to our resilience and our ability to really rise up in the face of adversity. But none of that happens if you keep it all to yourself. Right? Then you suffer in silence.
You know, my regular listeners hear me talk about CanDo MS all the time. I'm a fan. But for any of our newer listeners, can you tell us a bit about CanDo MS and maybe talk about some of the upcoming programs about invisible symptoms that I know you already have planned?
Why, I'd be happy to. Thanks for that opportunity. So CanDo is a nonprofit organization, but we focus on health and wellness programming and support and resources for people who live with MS. But in addition, we actually have a focus on support partners or care partners, caregivers. These are the people that go by multiple names, but they are the people closest to you who really do want to help. And we provide programs specific for that group of people and addressing their needs as well as the person with MS. So we have on-demand classes around exercise. We have live virtual programs around symptom management and other types of wellness strategies and lifestyle strategies. Many things are in small groups so people can learn from each other. These are facilitated by healthcare professionals with expertise in MS, but we really allow people to talk about what's important to them and then the kinds of solutions that people have come up with and how someone else might be able to put that into their toolbox to help them. In terms of the invisible symptoms, it's such an important topic and people always want to talk about this and learn new strategies. We're having programs this year that we're calling community programs. And for these, we're actually having an in-person component. Emerging from the pandemic and actually trying to have people in the same place. But because not everybody's comfortable with that at this point, there's a virtual component to this program as well. So we're collaborating with comprehensive centers for MS. So we're drawing on that expertise in MS to talk about these invisible symptoms and identify solutions for how people can manage them. So we're going to be looking in the Boston area with the Elliott Lewis Center, the Cleveland Clinic, so in Cleveland, in Baltimore with the Johns Hopkins MS Center, and in Atlanta at the Shepherd Center. We've already had two, and one in Florida and one in Texas, that were very successful, and people came away with lots of new strategies. So we invite people to check us out on our website at kendu-ms.org. Sorry about that. And also, I know that you'll be kind enough to let people know, and I so appreciate that. And even the National MS Society, an important partner with us, will also provide information for folks. I think it's a great opportunity, and I hope that your listeners take part.
Well, Kathy Costello, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people affected by MS, and thanks for talking with me today.
Well, thank you, John. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society, and you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/258. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes, and it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.